Welcome into another edition of NBA Sound System. My name is Gil McGregor. I am joined once again by my man, Scott Rafferty. Scott, how's it going?
Exhausted, man. The NBA never stops. It feels like, you know, 2 weeks ago, champion was just crowned. We have the parade, then the draft, then free agency, then summer league. The league is crazy now. It feels like it's 365, but it's also very exciting. How are you doing?
I'm good, Scott. You know, I was going to say, I'm glad you mentioned that a champion was crowned a few weeks ago. You haven't been on here since a champion was crowned. Before we get to what's going on in the league right now, I feel like you need a moment to just speak on the fact that Nikola Jokic is a Finals MVP and the Nuggets are champions now.
Yeah, I took time off work. I've been in Denver celebrating with the Nuggets. I mean, super impressive run by them, obviously. Super excited for Jokic to have got that first championship. This team proved themselves to be legit, right? For years, I think Jamal Murray and Jokic have proven themselves as playoff players, but to see them do it in a finals run like this is super impressive. And really, this team, I know it kind of takes away from the moment to instantly talk about, like, can this team be a dynasty, right? Like, winning a championship is the number one thing. It's really, really difficult to even just win one. But when you really look at the way the league is right now, how much uncertainty there is in both conferences, and really how young Jokic and Murray are, how good they are, how they've got guys like Aaron Gordon, Michael Porter Jr. under contract and things like that. I mean, this team's going to be probably the favorites to come out of the West for a few seasons now, which is going to be cool to see.
Yeah, I think that's the big thing. Two things really to stand out about the Nuggets. One, they are kind of head and shoulders above everybody right now because they are the defending champs, but also that they built through the draft, and everybody that's trying to play catch up is going to try to build through the draft, which just passed, free agency and offseason moves, which are on the horizon. And we're going to talk through all of that here, on this week's Sound System. I think we should start with the draft, which happened over the weekend. Victor Wembanyama is officially a San Antonio Spur. Brandon Miller went second to the Hornets, and Scoot Henderson is a Portland Trailblazer. Also of note, Olivier Maxence Prosper is a Dallas Maverick, and Leonard Miller is a Minnesota Timberwolf. He's a member of the Timberwolves. So two more Canadians to the long list of Canadians in the NBA. Scott, when you look at this draft and you kind of assess the players and who fits where, what stands out the most to you as that perfect fit for guys who have new teams?
I'm really intrigued by Cason Wallace on the Thunder, because I think on one hand, it could be a little bit of an awkward fit, right? Because you're looking at adding a guard to a team that has Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Josh Giddey, Jalen Williams handles the ball a ton. Like, it is a little bit of a weird fit. Ultimately, I love how funky this team is. Like, they've proven that all their guys can do so many different things. Mm-hmm. And also think, like, slotting him alongside Shai and Giddey and Jalen Williams, like, those guys are big, right?
Yeah,
so they can, like, their small is still big enough and super versatile enough where I think that adding someone who has a reputation of just being a hellacious defender, right? Mm-hmm. Gets up in guys' faces, generates steals. I like adding that to this team. And a guy who also can knock down threes and kind of play off ball. So I think he's in a good situation where they're going to probably put him in positions where he can play to his strengths, and they can also kind of cover for his weaknesses. And I also think it's kind of Lou Dort insurance, right? In case anything happens to him in the long run, because he can kind of fill kind of similar shoes, especially defensively. So I'm really intrigued by that fit. I feel like some of the stuff I read on draft night, some people were really high on it. Some people weren't because of that fit issue, but I think they're going to figure it out.
Yeah, our NBA draft analyst and expert, Kyle Irving, when that pick happened, was kind of scratching his head, you know, about the Thunder adding another guard. Because when you mentioned the guards they had, I wasn't even thinking about Lou Dort. How could I not think about him? But also, Trey Mann is another guard on that roster. Isaiah Joe, a sharp shooting guard on that roster. And they just add another guard to that team. I think it's interesting. You talk about the big guards that they have as far as Shai's size and Jalen Williams' size and Josh Giddey's size. And I think I'm torn on it because, like, part of me is like, man, how is this guy going to grow and become the player that he is? But I think where the Thunder are with the roster that they have, Shai being an all-NBA guy, having Chet Holmgren come in and essentially really be their main rookie this upcoming season, I'm starting to lean towards that trust in Sam Presti type deal, because – it kind of makes those other guys not expendable, but you can now get value from them. So I think that there is definitely an idea in mind already, because I was kind of thinking something similar last year when they drafted Jalen Williams. Like, they need another guard on this roster, and you saw, you know, three guard, four guard lineup. So in a way, this Thunder team is going to get funky, like you said, and kind of redefine the way that they do things. And I think that, you know, they're not going to try and copy what other teams are going to do, but kind of break their own mold, which I think is very exciting to see when you talk about, you know, the type of player that Cason Wallace is and what he does on the defensive end. And they're really, you know, the track record that Presti has speaks for itself. So I'm curious to see. I don't know if I'm all the way in on it yet, but I'm definitely curious to see on what that fit's actually going to look like once it kind of materializes.
And Chet's obviously a huge component of that, as you mentioned.
Yeah.
What he's able to do offensively is a stretch big, being able to pull defenders out to the three-point line, and also defensively, right? Like, he is a big potential anchor for them, which they didn't have last year. Haven't really had, since Steven Adams, probably. And he's, you know, more athletic, he's longer, he's more of a shot blocker. Steven Adams is a very big physical guy who's more of a defensive rebounder. So having that dynamic next to all these guys, I just really like the idea, too, of kind of playing combination of these guards. And really, it's one of those things where, like, whoever has the ball can just bring it up, right? And there's so much interchangeable skill there where still at the end of the game, it's going to be in Shea's hands. But I don't know. I'm very intrigued by kind of the direction that they're heading with some of the moves they've made over the last two seasons.
Yeah, I think that's the thing that's huge. You know, obviously Jokic is probably staked his claim as being the best player in the NBA. And you know, it's kind of disproving the theory that it's fully a guards league or a perimeter league. But at the end of the day, having playmakers, having ball handlers, having wings that are talented, and having shooting that reigns king. I was actually just listening to Larry Nance Jr. and Trey Murphy kind of on a New Orleans Pelican space on Twitter last night, and they were talking about how shooting reigns king in the NBA because it's so important to space the floor, which leads me to who I feel like is the perfect fit, and that's Grady Dick to the Raptors. Went 13th overall. He was high on a lot of people's draft boards. Didn't think he was going to be available at 13 for Toronto. And I think it's no secret that the Raptors had glaring shooting issues last year. Bottom three in the league in three-pointers made per game and three-point percentage. Grady Dick shot over 40% from three last year, just about six attempts per game at Kansas. And then he measures at 6'8". So, like, this is a big shooter. I know at one point during the NCAA tournament, we compared him to Klay Thompson a little bit. Just he says he studies guys like Reggie Miller, Ray Allen. He has Larry Bird as one of his favorite shooters of all time. So I think it's exciting to have a sharpshooter on that team who can really help the team with its biggest issue. Obviously, we don't know how the roster is going to shape out around him. You know, Fred VanVleet's free agency looms large, but whatever it is, we know they'll have him and Scotty Barnes, and he's already talked about the way he play off of Scotty Barnes, who can, under the new leadership of Darko Rajakovic, do a lot of pick and roll and floor spacing. I think that shooting that Grady Dick is going to provide is going to be massive for the Raptors playing the way that they're probably going to want to play under Darko Rajakovic.
Yeah, I mean, surface level, one of the worst three-point shooting teams in the league, added a guy who many considered to be the best three-point shooter in the draft class. That's a natural win. But Stefano wrote a really good piece on NBA Canada about kind of going beyond just, you know, he's a really good shooter. And it's not just that he can spot up, it's that he can create movement, right? Like, he can shoot off of screens, he can attack closeouts, he's a good cutter. And to your point, especially that dynamic with Scotty Barnes, developing like dribble handoffs with that, you know, because a lot of the times the Raptors have just not been a very good half-court offense basically since Kawhi left. It helps having one of the greatest scorers in NBA history to just give the ball to when you need a bucket. But, you know, a lot of it, kind of the offense of the last couple of years in particular, I feel like it can get very ISO heavy and very bogged down, right? Like, people kind of just standing on the perimeter waiting for stuff to happen. So I think adding a guy who can run off of the screen, who is going to cut backdoor, who is going to run in transition, things like that, beyond just the spacing that he provides as a shooter, I think all that's going to be a nice addition to this Raptors team.
And I think that's huge, too. You know, Grady Dick actually was introduced to the Raptors the day before we recorded this, so the Monday of this week, so the Monday after the draft, and he talked about, you know, the relationship and that he's already forging with Darko Rajakovic, who has a calling card of player development. So, like you talked about, the things that he does outside of his shooting ability, you can trust that those things are going to be cultivated and developed, because, you know, in years past, I think the Raptors have gotten a little bit away, you know, from, you know, their reputation for developing players and developing guys into being, you know, really impactful. Chris Boucher obviously is an example of a guy who has kind of grown into a bigger role, but seeing Grady Dick come in as a lottery talent, under a head coach who again has a track record of developing guys like Desmond Bane, who is much more than just a shooter now. Mikal Bridges, who has added a lot to his toolbox offensively. Grady Dick, again, that 6'8" height that he brings with him, I think that unlocks a lot of things that he can be able to do offensively and also defensively. He's 19 years old. He'll be 20 about a month into the season. So talking about just him being eager to learn, coming from a system like the University of Kansas, I think that's huge for him as well, because you see a lot of guys who play in major college basketball situations and programs. They kind of do have the mentality of learning and knowing how to play the right way, because you don't get to Kansas if you don't play basketball the right way. And I think the biggest thing off the court is just how excited he seems to be a member of the Raptors and kind of a member of that Toronto community. I see some parallels. He's a goofy kid who's similar to what Scottie Barnes brought to the franchise, you know, 2 years ago. For a franchise that's not necessarily rebuilding, but they're retooling for the future, to have two guys at the forefront of your franchise who are going to bring excitement to the locker room, to the fan base, I think that makes it a good culture fit, because there's nothing wrong with the culture, but they have to keep the culture moving forward. And I think that's huge when you draft a guy like that.
Yeah, no, I feel like Scottie Barnes' rookie season, there was a lot of talk about like the good vibes on the team, right? Yeah, how fun everything was. And it does feel like it's kind of, last season in particular, it lost that at stages, right? Like there was a lot of frustration on this team. So I think, to your point, adding another young player, super talented, fits a need, and is also going to kind of be a playful personality, it seems like, in the locker room. As you were talking that through, it really did make me think about Scottie Barnes and that first year when he was drafted, and he's posting videos of him landing in Toronto and interacting with fans. Like, he seemed to just eat up and really enjoy it. So I think that's a good point. It does kind of feel a similar way there.
Yeah, Scottie Barnes washed away the bad vibes from the Tampa season, and now Grady Dick can wash away the bad vibes from the 41-41 play-in loss season, whatever. We'll move forward.
That's
kind of the best way to define the season that the Raptors just had. Now, elsewhere in the league, there are some teams who are building outside of the draft. There were a lot of major trades, literally just recently yesterday. John Collins traded from the Atlanta Hawks to the Utah Jazz in exchange for Rudy Gay and a second round pick. Seems like a salary dump for Atlanta. Interesting landing spot for JC. That's one of a lot of trades that have happened. We've seen a former defensive player of the year get moved, one-time all-star, a multi-time all-star, an NBA 75 team member, and seeing that Kristaps Porzingis is now a member of the Celtics. Chris Paul now rerouted from D.C. to the Golden State Warriors. Bradley Beal officially a member of the Phoenix Suns. We see him in his purple and orange digs now. So as you look and assess these moves that are being made by contending teams, as we talked at the beginning about teams kind of trying to play catch up with the Nuggets, what do you view as the best fit of some of these major deals involving major players?
I think the fit I like the most is probably Marcus Smart in Memphis. I think defensively, they were already a very good team defensively off the back of Jaren Jackson Jr., who just won Defensive Player of the Year. So adding a guy who won Defensive Player of the Year 2 years ago to this roster, the two of them, I know Marcus Smart's coming off a bit of a down year. He struggled with injuries. He's also a small guard that plays super physical. So I think, you know, that's something to monitor as he kind of ages. I do wonder if there's a big drop off at some point, but I still think I have confidence, given his age, that he still is bouncing back, and the two of them just being absolutely nasty defensively. And I just think they also just need kind of like an adult in the room, right? Like they need another veteran. Yeah. And I think Marcus Smart's one of those guys. Like, on one hand, it could rub people the wrong way because we know what kind of personality he is, but I also think this is what they need. They need someone to come in, the way that he plays, super physical, get in people's faces and everything like that. I just really like that fit for them in particular. So I think that's my favorite landing spot that we've seen so far. The one I think I'm most intrigued by is Chris Paul in Golden State, because it's weird. Like, just given the history that they've had, right? Like, you would never expect Chris Paul to go to Golden State. I also think stylistically, it's not a Chris Paul team, right? Like, the Warriors move the ball a ton. They run off of screens. They get up and down. Chris Paul has made a career out of being much more I guess, methodical, right? Like he likes the ball in his hands. He runs a pick and roll. He has a rim runner. So I think there is a clash of style there. But I also think that Chris Paul is one of the greatest point guards of all time, right? His body keeps breaking down. He's at the end of his career. I think moving to a bench role will suit him really well. And I also think he probably doesn't get enough credit for the changes that he has made to his game in his career. Like I think back to the Rockets when it's like he joined a Mike D'Antoni team led by James Harden that was running basically ISOs every single possession down the court. And Chris Paul basically became like James Harden 2.0, where it's like he, you know, he didn't have the ball in his hands as much as Harden did, but he was running a ton of ISOs, not as many pick and rolls. So I think ultimately, as long as Chris Paul is bought in, which I think he will be, because this does give him a chance to win a championship, which is like the only thing left for him to do, I think they're going to figure it out. And I think it adds a really interesting dynamic off of Golden State's bench.
Yeah, I think when you talk about Chris Paul, and one thing that comes to mind, in addition to him just being one of the all-time greats, he's one of the smartest players to ever play the game, right? And I've even heard him say, like, you know, you might be faster than me, you might be taller than me, more athletic, whatever, but you're not going to know the game better than I know the game. And I think about, you know, the Warriors, and you talk about the playing style that they have. And it was interesting because what came to mind, I was actually at a Hornets game during the season. They asked Steve Clifford about like scouting other teams' offenses, excuse me. And he was saying that pretty much everybody in the league runs the same thing except for the Warriors. So thinking about Chris Paul, one of the smartest players to ever play the game, coming to a system that's unlike anything that anybody else does. But then also thinking about how the Warriors found success in the postseason for a minute, at least, because they ended up losing the series, but to the Lakers by adding more pick and roll offense, now having one of the best pick and roll guys in league history to kind of give a different look and maybe allow them to transform stylistically a little bit. I agree. That definitely makes it an intriguing fit more than anything else. I'm curious to see what else they will do this offseason. I don't know if there is addition by subtraction in trading Jordan Poole. And not to say that Jordan Poole was a bad player, but I don't think that he fit what they were trying to do. He obviously helped them win a championship, but they regressed this past season. I know their locker room things, and it seems like trading him was a choice and a vote for Draymond Green. But that being said, it's just so many question marks that go with this Warriors team, because again, they are trying to chase those defending champions in Denver, and there are other teams in the Western Conference that are all kind of on that same level. So curious to see what 38-year-old Chris Paul will bring to the table, what a different type of role and a reduced role can do for him, and how that can extend what he's able to do in a new territory. And it's still weird because I feel like it's not going to feel real until I see him in that blue and yellow uniform. Like even when he's getting asked about it, he just kind of seems like, yeah, I don't want to speak on this until it's official. So once it's official, I can actually maybe envision it more. But as far as that goes, I'm interested. Now, As for me, I would probably go Kristaps Porzingis in Boston.
Okay.
I know we talked about Marcus Smart and him being the heart and soul of that franchise, and I know some Celtics fans and they've all kind of taken it really hard. I think the fan base has taken it hard that they never thought that Marcus Smart would be the guy that would be on the move. And on the one hand, like, I understand that him being the heart and soul of the franchise and the guy that kind of reestablishes and reinforces that culture. But at the same time, like, they need to shake something up. This is a team that's been that close for so many times, and that's a franchise in a city that close doesn't cut it. So they had to do something. And I think it's interesting to have a front court rotation now of Porzingis, Al Horford, and Robert Williams. They have a guy who can score in different ways and kind of bring more scoring from that position than they've had in a long time. So I think that it just makes things interesting, and the rim protection that he provides on the defensive end as well. I'm interested to see how that plays out. I'm interested to see how big of a void Marcus Smart leaves. Maybe it allows Jason Tatum to be more vocal in his leadership and take a step that he maybe couldn't take when there's a guy who's been there longer than you. So, you know, I don't take it lightly, you know, what Marcus Smart meant to that locker room and what to that franchise, but maybe they needed to take a step back in order to take a bigger step forward.
I don't know what to make of Porzingis in Boston, to be completely honest. I think on the positive, he's almost the best of Al Horford and Robert Williams, right? Like a mm-hmm. floor right. spacing big. He can shoot better than Horford, really. add a scoring element that maybe Horford brings, but he's, you know, more of a post-up threat and everything like that. But then defensively, having the shot blocking versatility that Robert Williams provides. And I think they're probably going to be able, like, Porzingis can play next to both of them, right? We're going to see him play power forward at times, center at times, big, small lineups. I think he does add an interesting dynamic to the team. Again, going back to his ability to kind of create for himself and the post. He's one of the best post-up scorers in the league last season. I don't know how much I kind of value that. Like, I still think he's the same, kind of the same Porzingis he's been in his whole career, right? Like, the way that he operates out of the post, it's a lot of face-up, shooting over guys. But he does add that element to this team. So I think that kind of stuff checks a lot of good boxes for them. What I don't know how to make about it is that I ultimately think, like, the biggest problem with this team, right, is they go through phases, what feels like the most important parts of the season, where the ball stops, the ball's not moving. Like, they need someone to kind of settle things down. And Porzingis doesn't do that, right? So I wonder if they're kind of just signing up for the same issues that they're going to have. But to your point, maybe, you know, not having Smart, that opens up more of a leadership role for Tatum. And what does that do for the on-court stuff? I don't know. But I think that's kind of why I'm just like, I don't know what to make of the trade. Because I like it on one hand, I do like it, his fit. And I think it's going to be really good, especially in the regular season. But I don't know if Porzingis is the piece that they needed to kind of get over that hump that they faced the last couple of years.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. I think, like you said, it's going to have that regular season success, but the issues that they've been having, they were 2 wins away 2 years ago, and they were, I guess, 5 wins away this past year. So it'll be interesting to see if they have anything else up their sleeves moves-wise. Yeah. I think we've now learned that Brad Stevens is willing to kind of do whatever to improve this roster. They're limited financially, but we will see if they can do anything in the margins during free agency. Speaking of free agency, we're going to take a quick break. Then we'll
I was going to say we should mention the injury stuff with Porzingis too, where it's like he was healthy last year, but he's dealt with injuries for a large part of his career. So that's another element where this could ultimately go wrong.
That's also true. I think that's intriguing as well. Can he stay healthy? Yep. You know, last year he played 65 games, which I think was the second most he's ever played in his career. So not a lot of games, missed 17, but still we'll see if he's playing at a playoff intensity, what that can do. That being said, we will look into the free agency aspect of things after we take a really quick break. We'll talk about some guys we have our eye on, as well as some teams that we have our eye on in free agency. Now, before we get into free agency, one thing I think is interesting that neither of us talked about the Bradley Beal trade when we talked about what intrigued us, talked about what we liked the most. Does that mean that we're concerned about the fact that the Suns made this move to get Bradley Beal? They only have like 5 guys on a guaranteed contract for this upcoming season. Or what do you think about Bradley Beal in the Valley of the Sun?
I think it's just a big question mark for me still, right? Because we just have no idea what the rest of this roster is going to look like. Even DeAndre Ayton, there's news from Mark Stein that there was a, you know, they came close to trading to the Mavericks on draft night and how they could revisit those conversations. So it's just beyond that top three, like, we really don't know what the Suns are going to look like. I think, you know, the three of them together have the potential to obviously be incredible offensively. Like, they're three guys who can handle the ball, play, make, shoot, particularly from mid-range. Like, that offense should be absolutely dynamic, but in a similar way to like what we just discussed with, you know, the Celtics and what Porzingis does, and if he kind of addresses their biggest need, like, at the end of the day, like, defense was a big problem for them in that Nuggets series, right? And if we're going to assume that the Western Conference is going to run through the Nuggets for a few years now, like, even if their offense is a little bit better, is their offense good enough to kind of outpace the Nuggets, knowing that they're probably not going to be able to stop on the other end either? Again, a lot of this is going to come down to what they do in free agency, what kind of shooters they add, what kind of defenders they add, because that's going to be a big question for them. So there's just a lot of unknown, but I mean, I'm super intrigued to see if Booker, Beal, and Durant can figure it out.
Yeah, twofold question for you with respect to the Suns. Do you think that trading DeAndre Ayton is the best way to flesh that roster out and build? Or do you think that having those stars, a former number one overall pick, and Ayton, Durant, Booker, and Beal will make it a big enough attraction that they can get some guys in there on veterans minimums that can actually be impactful? Because getting both of those things at the same time is not easy.
I mean, they should be a free agent destination, right? Like, this is a good opportunity to win a championship. There's going to be shots available, right? Because beyond those top three or top four, like, that, pretty much anyone, you can pencil anyone in right now. So I do think they're going to be a destination. On the Ayton thing specifically, I think in a vacuum, right, like Ayton makes a ton of sense for them. Like, versatile defender who can step out to the perimeter, put pressure on teams at the rim. Yes, he's not like a powerful finisher around the basket. He has a really good touch, can shoot from mid-range, little hook shots, everything like that. But, you know, there has been talks about, like, it does seem like he does want more touches. He wants to be involved in the offense. And the reality is, on a team that has, he's going to be the fourth best player with three gifted shooters that Booker, Beal, and Durant are, I wonder if this is going to be another, like, we saw his effort kind of wane in the playoffs, right? That's just not something they can have if they're going to be this top heavy of a team. So that's another thing that I think, you know, if they do look to trade him, I wonder if that's a big part of it beyond just kind of adding depth.
Yeah, you know, as that trade that you mentioned that kind of stalled, the holdup was that the Suns didn't want to take back JaVale McGee, but the trade, they would have gotten Rashawn Holmes and Tim Hardaway Jr. from Dallas, which again fleshed the roster out a little bit. They also probably will bring back Cameron Payne, whose salary is currently non-guaranteed, and they got Jordan Goodwin, who actually can play. So familiarize yourself with that name. He made a name for himself a little bit in D.C. last year, and Isaiah Todd, who's a young talent. So these guys are going to be asked to do a lot, and they also recently just worked out Stanley Johnson, who played for Frank Vogel with the Lakers, and Jabari Parker, another former lottery pick, who seems like it was just 2 years ago. Actually, it was just 2 years ago. He's playing for the Celtics before they let him go. So these are guys who fill the void, and that's going to be the type of guys they need to get the most out of. So it'll be interesting to see what they're able to do, whether it's via trade, via free agency, or both. Now, speaking of free agency, first of all, over at the Sporting News, we have a ton of free agency content. Our guy, Steph, Scott, you said it multiple times, has been like a machine with this free agency content. Top 50 free agents, positional rankings, a lot of those things over the Sporting News. Please go check that out to get ready for free agency, which begins on Friday, June 30th, and maybe earlier if you're a tampering team. But when you look at this free agency class, which, you know, doesn't necessarily have the superstar cachet as past years, but has some depth to it and some sneaky guys to it, who intrigues you? What stands out to you in this free agency class? I guess I should just say, who is the most intriguing free agent in this class to you?
I am intrigued to see what happens with Fred VanVleet. You know, that there's talk out there that the Rockets are going to pursue him aggressively. They have a ton of cap space. They're also another team that kind of needs an adult in the room. Very young roster, and having someone who's experienced like Fred VanVleet, I think, makes a lot of sense there. He's not my pick, though. I've got to say, like, I know this is a bit of a deeper cut because we're going beyond, like, the top 15 here. I really like Grant Williams, man. Like, I've liked him. I think he's a super versatile role player. 6 foot six forward. He's big enough to defend the Giannis's of the NBA, or at least, you know, kind of stick with them, make it difficult for them. You need those guys. And then he's also quick enough to defend multiple positions. Like, he's one of the most versatile forward defenders in the league. And I think he's also almost a career 40% three-point shooter, right? A guy who can space it out from the four position. So he's just someone I think makes it kind of fits anywhere, right? Like, every team kind of needs someone like Grant Williams. And I know he had a down year in Boston. There were some moments that weren't great there, like the free throws at the end of that one, that Cavs game. wasn't a great look ahead of free agency and everything like that. But I'm just a Grant Williams guy. I've liked him for years, and I think this could be a good opportunity if he doesn't return to the Celtics to kind of, you know, I think of a team like the Mavericks, right? Like, what he's able to do defensively there, and then offensively space the floor and kind of fill in some of those gaps. I just think he makes a ton of sense in a lot of places.
I'm sounding like a broken record here, but again, it's a copycat league, and a lot of people have talked about how Grant Williams is going to make a lot of money, and he did fall out of favor with Joe Mazzulla and fell out of rotation for a while, but then came back and showed fight. You know, even though Jimmy Butler got the best of him, he showed fight for that Celtics team in the postseason. And I think it's interesting to now think about, does the acquisition of Kristaps Porzingis kind of signal the end of Grant Williams' time in Boston? And thinking about just the fact that, you know, he is not the same player, but in that similar mold of like a PJ Tucker. They both played for Rick Barnes in college, and seeing how he's kind of a I don't want to say modern day version of him, but a different kind of that player.
It's similar enough, right? It's the same similar archetype.
Enough to make, you know, so same archetype and so much younger. So, like you said, so many teams could use that. We've seen what PJ Tucker, the championship toughness he brought to that Bucks team when they won. And then thinking about teams, you know, whether it's going to be a team in the Eastern Conference that says we need a body to throw at Giannis, or is it a team in the Western Conference that just knows what Grant Williams is capable of doing it and feels like they have the personnel to kind of make him the best version of him? I know he's been linked to the Magic. I don't know if that would be the best thing. I know they're trying to make a leap forward, and because I think they won 34, 35 games last year. So they're honestly kind of right there, especially with the draft picks they had and Anthony Black and Jet Howard. So I wouldn't sleep on them being kind of an up-and-comer in the Eastern Conference, but the Mavericks is another great fit for Grant Williams. Now, for me, it's twofold. One is two guys who I don't really not so much for speculation of where they're going, but just how much money they're going to get and how that's going to shift the market. Austin Reeves and Cameron Johnson. It'll be interesting to see, one, how much the Lakers really, really value Austin Reeves when it comes down to it. I saw some reports that they drafted Jalen Hood-Schifino as insurance in case they can't afford Austin Reeves. I think he's going to command a big contract based on what we saw from him in the postseason. Cameron Johnson is a guy who Monty Williams, I believe, loved coaching in Phoenix. It looks like the Pistons are prepared to offer him a contract that the Nets might not be comfortable matching. So those are two guys who I look at as far as restructuring the market. But the guy who I have is, again, outside of the top 15, Bruce Brown. It was great.
It's a good one.
For Denver this past season. Opted out because he's going to probably get paid as well. It'll be interesting to see, maybe he pulls a Bobby Portis and decides to stay in Denver in order to kind of reprise that role of what he did. Or he goes elsewhere, and then Denver just by subtraction becomes weaker and they will need more from that roster. And we talked about teams playing catch up with the Nuggets. They still are top heavy with the starting lineup that they have, but they do get weaker, you know, losing a key member of that 8-man rotation. So I do think that, you know, he's not going to completely shift you know, everything, but I'll be curious to see if, you know, a team who has a lot of money to spend. You mentioned Houston for Fred VanVleet already. A team like that who, you know, they could throw some money at him that other team couldn't in order to kind of maybe try to expedite their process to get back, you know, into competing in the Western Conference, because they had an incredible draft and they have an incredible core of young players. And it seems like any veteran that's worth anything is being linked to the Rockets, which, I guess, spoiler alert, I have them as my most intriguing team in free agency as well because of that, for that reason. So I guess I should just flip it back to you and ask you, are you as equally intrigued by the Rockets as I am as free agency gets underway? Or is there another team that you have kind of on your list as being intriguing when free agency gets underway?
It does feel like the Rockets are going to set the market, right? Like they're just linked to everyone. Fred VanVleet, Brook Lopez, you know, even Dylan Brooks, who we know his end with the Grizzlies wasn't great, but it does kind of feel like they're going to set the market. They could sign like almost two max guys. I think they're going to have around like $60 million in cap space potentially. Chris Milton's another one who's been linked to them, I think. So it's going to be interesting. They have a ton of young talent. So getting, you know, it seems like they want guys who can play both ends of the floor. Jakob Poeltl is another guy who I saw was linked to them, vets and things like that. So they're definitely interesting. They weren't the team I had here. I mean, it feels like there's new Damian Lillard news every single day. I think I have my eye on the Trailblazers more than anything. It does kind of seem like going into the draft, it kind of felt like what they do with that number three pick was going to dictate kind of what direction Damian Lillard went. They took Scoot. And then now it kind of seems like what they do in free agency could dictate which direction Lillard wants to go. Sam Amick on The Athletic had a report the other day that said apparently one dream scenario for Lillard would be re-signing Jeremy Grant and then all that, adding Draymond Green in free agency, which Draymond Green's another fascinating free agent where I feel like we're kind of just assuming he's re-signing with the Warriors. It does seem like there's confidence based on the reporting that that's what's going to happen. But like, I mean, he's another guy who makes sense everywhere, right? We know how good Draymond Green still is defensively, offensively. He's an elite passer, great short roller, the veteran leadership that he brings, how tough he is. The Kings, I know, have been linked to him. But like, you know, can the Blazers actually pull something like that off? I think I'm just fascinated to see what kind of moves they're able to make, because they're not like a cap space team, right? They're not the Rockets. So are they able to make enough moves here, whether it is creating space to pursue someone like that, if it's trading someone? I'm just fascinated to see what they do, kind of what direction this Damian Lillard stuff goes, because it seems like, who knows with him if he's ever going to get traded, but if he is, he's probably the best player to be traded this offseason.
Yeah, on the Draymond Green front, I will say that, you know, it all signs indicate that he's going to stay in Golden State, but I feel like we're just one, you know, miscommunication or one step away from being not on the same page in negotiations with a new GM and Mike Dunleavy yep. Jr. from that just kind of completely falling apart. But I do want to ask you, you mentioned Portland. Where do you stand on all of this? Like Damian Lillard, loyalty to the Trailblazers organization unquestioned. Do you feel like this has kind of run its course? Or do they just continue to try to do this thing with Dame until Dame says, I don't want to do it anymore?
It's really hard. I mean, we saw this not to quite the same extent, but with the Warriors, right? And how difficult these two timelines are to kind of juggle.
Right.
Because the Blazers, on one hand, they do have a, 32-year-old all-time great who wants to win. But on the other hand, you're a very young team with Anthony Simon, Shaedon Sharpe, now Scoot Henderson. There is mm-hmm. positional overlap with Scoot Henderson and Damian Lillard. So I have, kind of going back to why I chose him as the team to watch for me in free agency, is that, like, I don't know if they're going to be able to pull this stuff off. Like, I don't mm-hmm. know if they can get Jeremy Grant and Draymond Green. And then you're almost kind of running back the same team that got off to a good start last year, but ultimately fizzled mm-hmm. out and didn't do anything.
Yep.
So... Look, I get it. Damian Lillard is a super loyal guy. Like, I think it's super admirable that he's wanted to do this and he wants to win in Portland. He wants to stay there. Like, I think some of the best stories over the last couple decades are like Dirk winning in Dallas, right? Giannis winning that ring in Milwaukee means so much more right. because that's the team that drafted him and that's the team that he's gone right. through all these bumps in the road with. I just don't know if I can see the Trailblazers getting there over the next couple years, which I think is probably what Dame still has left of playing at this kind of all-star and all-NBA level. Because, you know, you look at it like if he's going to get traded, the Heat are the one that makes the most sense, right? And mm-hmm. pairing him, if they could pull it off with Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo, I mean, that's a trio that just fits, I think, so well together and has the potential mm-hmm. to just be super dynamic and kind of elevates them. Obviously, we're talking about a team that just made it to the finals and beat every team in the Eastern Conference. But I think, you know, elevates them to the same level that we are. We do talk about the Bucks and the Celtics. Mm-hmm. And even the 76ers, although they have some questions they have to answer too. But I don't know if that answered your question, but it's a super difficult situation, I feel like, that the Trailblazers are trying to navigate.
It is difficult to navigate. And I think where I stand to try to put it plainly, I think it's time to move on, but I also realize and recognize and understand that they're not going to do that until Dame says that I want to move on. And right. his loyalty and kind of the personality that he has, I think it's going to take a lot for him to actually come out and say that. But I think that we've seen the peak of that team back in 2019 when they lost to the Warriors in the conference finals. And I think it's time to just see, you know, what a core of Scoot, Shaedon Sharpe, and Anthony Simons can get you, or some combination of those guys. I do think that Scoot has the potential to be a franchise altering talent. As we wrap up here, you mentioned the Heat for a second. I just want to hit you with a quick question. A recent report from Miami Herald that they're mulling over the future of Kyle Lowry, if they will keep him or trade him, maybe wave and stretch him. Do you think Kyle Lowry will be in a Heat uniform on opening night next season?
It's a tough question. I think yes. I think ultimately yes. Okay. I think Lowry was pretty good for them this season. Obviously not the player that he used to be, but the going kind of establishing himself as like that sixth man on that team really helped them in the second half of that regular season. And he had some moments in the playoffs too. So, I mean, a lot of this obviously hinges on what kind of moves the Heat make right. because his salary can help them match it. But I don't know. That when I first saw that report, I thought, I don't know. I was surprised by it. So I think, yeah, I'll go yeah. What about you?
Yeah, I think they use that trade chip. I don't think they'll waive him. You know, I think that owing him $10 million over 3 years is much worse than just getting the $30 million out of the way right now. But, you know, I can see him, if he gets waived, just go back home and close things out in Toronto, especially if Fred VanVleet moves on to get a point guard to kind of usher in the new era and everything. He retires a Raptor like he says he will. Keep it locked in with us here on NBA Sound System as we keep you up to speed with everything going on and what should be a busy offseason. We're just a few days away from Summer League getting underway, so we'll see the debuts of a few notable rookies, including Grady Dick, and we will see whether or not Victor Wembanyama suits up for the Spurs. Already let us know he's not playing for France this offseason, but plenty of basketball to keep up with, plenty of moves to keep up with, as well as free agency gets underway in a few days. For Scott Rafferty, I am Gil McGregor. Thanking you for tuning in to NBA Sound System. Make sure to rate, subscribe, and get these wherever you get your podcasts. Catch you this time next week on NBA South. Thanks for tuning in.